life's gone down the drain. Your body's wrecked with pain. There's just one thing to blame. Dynamite in the brain.
You are listening to Dynamite in the Brain with Brian Smith and Anthony Askew. Tonight's episode, Japan Animator Expo Shorts Part 2. That's right, we're back. And joining us once again, it's Niall Flanagan.
Hello again.
Woo.
We are back for another chunk of the Japan Animator Expo Shorts. In this episode, we'll be talking about the ones which were released between March the 13th, 2015, and May the 29th, 2015. So, let's get cracking. And we start off with one which is called Canon. It's not the visual novel adaptation. It was a visual novel, wasn't it, Canon?
Yeah, yes. Canon. Goo.
No, this is directed by Mihiro Maeda, who I think did one of the ones for the last thing.
Oh, he is all over Anime Expo.
He is, yes.
If he isn't directing, he's animation directing. He's all over these things, man.
Yes, the thing he's famous people know him for is Gankutsuo, the Count of Monte Cristo.
Yeah.
And this is another literary adaptation. It is based on, here we go, I should have really looked up how to pronounce this because I didn't know such thing. Is it Carol Capek? Capek?
Or Carol, is it Carol Capek.
Yeah. Novel on, here we go, Adam, and now I have no idea how to pronounce this second word. It's STVO. R with what accent is that?
Tilde on it's like a no a down arrow. It's like a down inflection.
Yeah, I should know with my job. I should know. Ritel.
Ritel.
Yes. And so this is all about a guy who decides that he hates the universe, and so he's going to redesign it in his own image. Screw you, God. And then it all starts going wrong.
Who knew creating the universe would be so hard?
Yeah. I did look at the a wiki page describing the novel, and it seems pretty close. I think there's some bits towards the end that they may have expanded on or missed out a few. But in general, yeah, it is pretty close to what is in the novel.
Yeah, you're getting the kind of super condensed version. it doesn't like let up ever. Which is
No, it doesn't. No, it goes full bore. A lot of talking, but a lot of movement as well to go with the talking. It's
It's just kind of morphing again from like almost one style to the next, from one frame to the next. Almost it feels like.
This is the one with the very fast talking, isn't it?
Yes.
It's one of the ones. Of this episode, yes, it's one of the ones with the very fast talking.
Probably fastest.
Yeah, it could be. I'd have to do a comparison. There's one in the next podcast which also has a lot of talking and fast talking. But this is generally pretty much one person. And when a second person comes in to talk, it's pretty much he makes a clone of himself. And so he has the same voice.
It's all right, though. I found it, I was able to keep up with it. Probably watching all that Ninja Gaiden and Samurai Master has really trained me well to follow what's going on here.
Oh, yeah, I really enjoyed this. This felt, after all the Evangelion stuff sat through on the first episode, it was like, this kind of felt it could be an inspiration for Evangelion. I don't know whether it was or not, so it kind of fitted in that way, but it was divergent enough that it was... it was a different flavour, and I really appreciated it.
Good palate cleanser almost. Yeah.
But you can definitely see watching it how it could fit in with the themes of Evangelion as well, of a guy deciding, I'm not content with this world. Let's kickstart another one.
This is a lot funnier, though.
It is theory. A lot funnier, yes. What about you, Anthony? What do you think of this one?
I enjoyed it. I felt it was a bit... At the start, I just had no clue where it was headed. And then it just went a bit ape. But I enjoyed it enough to, as you say, it was a bit of a breath of fresh air following the previous three, I think, from the last bunch that are just like, ugh.
The last bunch was fine. I think it was just the very last thing we had was Evangelion, Another Impact.
Oh, is it that? Well, that felt like three.
Yeah.
I guess about an interesting take on just, you know, humans being greedy. And it's true. Yeah, it was cool.
Well, it's a bit more kind of like a grass is greener type situation. Yes. And then you find out
it's not so easy, is it, being God? It's like... I think that's also kind of part of the point of it. It's like, yes, when you despair at your creator, just think how hard of a job he's got. Okay, next up is Sex and Violence with Max Speed by Hiroyuki Imayashi, who we know from Dead Leaves, Anthony's favourite, Panty and Stocky with Garter Belt, and Kill the Kill.
Yep, it does all of that.
Yep.
And it does it well.
Oh, you enjoy this one, Anthony?
I bloody loved it. This was so good. And I was like, I had to take a break after this. I was like, I just wanted to let it sink in, and I rewatched different bits of it again. I thoroughly enjoyed this one, actually.
I was wondering, because this feels to me like the closest thing to Dead Leaves he's done since Dead Leaves.
Oh, I couldn't agree more, but I don't know, there was just something that... It was funny. There's so many funny moments, and I like this visual style. Although it is similar to Dead Leaves, I like the whole kind of the singular colours, the black and the white, and then a solid colour that runs throughout. And the characters are interesting, unlike the Dead Leaves ones. I don't know. It's far more perverse as well.
Yeah, maybe he's just a better storyteller now than he was.
Yeah, and this is a lot shorter than Dead Leaves.
That is true.
Perhaps if Dead Leaves was this length and it had just the prison scene, I would be all over Dead Leaves, but it's not.
If it had more dinosaur gangsters.
Yeah, exactly. And what's the violence guy called? Kun.
Yeah.
Yeah, he is amazing. In fact, all three of them, everybody in this is really good, so high octane from start to finish.
It really does feel like, okay, we're going to get all, you say, creator guys. Imayashi, you want to come on this? You can do whatever you want. He does anything I want, eh? What we're going to do is sing about a shark detective, and he's got his henchman who's a monkey, and when he sticks his nose up his arse, he hulks out and starts killing people. You got it. Go ahead.
Yeah, and obviously the name also suggests, like, well, I don't have access to Panty and Stocky anymore, so I need something to replace it, because this comes back. It reappeared in Space Patrol Luluco.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Yeah.
This entire short, or...?
No, but these characters, because there's a series of three episodes in Space Patrol Luluco, or maybe it works out as four, I can't quite remember, where they go to other Trigger universes.
Oh, wow.
I think it's four.
Include
Inferno Cop in there.
Yes, because that's the fourth one, yeah.
Well, that's definitely a bonus for Luluco, finally, for me.
Yeah.
Sorry, go on.
Sorry, I was going to say that they actually reuse most of the footage from this. Not so much the very, 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 very crude stuff. That thing starts to go out for a different audience, but you know, they pretty much reused the whole thing for an episode. Just insert or special Luluco characters there on top of it.
Yeah, maybe I should watch Luluco.
You should.
Maybe if it's like this, I would probably like it.
It's like this for one episode.
Well, maybe I should just watch that one.
It was pretty good. It's very short, anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess it can't go wrong with short stuff.
And if you like. From the last Anime Expo bunch, we did the Me, the Teddy Lloyd, the musical artist for that, did the ending theme for it.
Oh, okay. I actually rewatched that one last night. So, I just love the bit where they kill, spoilers, where the mafia boss's son's dead and he's like, oh, wear the skin, pretend he's alive. And he has the skin just. And I was like, oh my God, this is perfect.
It's funny, guys, really.
It is. This is such a funny one. I think I was like, oh, this is going to take a hell of a lot to beat.
Mm.
And I don't know whether anything beats this.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I see. I think Lost Things beats it. I mean, I quite like it, but I think it might be my least favourite of his works.
I mean...
Not of these shorts, but of Imayashi's works.
Oh, right, fair enough,
He has done better things, and there are better things in this batch of pieces of animation as well. It's still fun, but, you know, I wouldn't linger on too much, because I appreciate it a lot, but I would still acknowledge that, look, this is pretty far out. This is pretty lurid. it helps when he has someone else to restrain. This feels a lot like him just unleashing.
Well, this had lots of people working on it, including the guy behind the next thing. But
it did, yeah. But I suppose it just got a lot of him in this.
There is a lot of him in, yes. But
I'm working alongside him, maybe not so much to kind of guide him and restrain him a bit, but more to, I think, to boost him forward, if anything.
Yeah, or maybe they were holding him back, and who knows what it would be like if he wasn't. They weren't there.
Yeah, I would tell people to watch this, because I've been compiling a list of these to give some friends, and this is definitely on the list. 100%.
Next up, we've got Obake-chan, directed by Shigeto Kayama, who was also working on Sex and Violence with Max Speed. He is best known for being the designer of Baymax in Big Hero 6.
Oh, that is a good claim to fame.
And lots of mechanical design on things like Diebuster, Hero Man. He did the design for Inferno Cop and also Justice in Space Patrol Uluko. Mecha design in Michiko and Hatchin, Captain Earth, Star Driver. But this does not feature Mecha. It features a girl ghost and her ghost cat and her ghost big sister. And it's got music by the Q-Recorder Quartet, who people would know if they listen to, various Ian Lee radio programs. But from anime, they did the Azumanga Daioh music and the Suratama music.
Mm-hmm.
This is just like little sketches about a ghost. And I really like this. I enjoy the recurring sketch of the adventuring party looking for a sword.
They are good.
And then the creepy ending theme where there's like real life photos.
I liked the cover version of that one song from End of Evangelion as well. once you have access to a lot of the materials from like Evangelion and stuff, based upon who's behind this, they used these to kind of musical stings from the various sources of Avian things in pretty funny ways in this.
And the design is kind of like black ink on brown paper.
It looks good. I wasn't as keen as you by the sounds of things. I felt it was a bit slow. Then it kind of goes a bit nuts at the end, but in a way that I was like, eh. I mean, the cat with the little ghost thing is very cute. A little pet cat.
Yeah, because they're ghosts in that they're humans or a cat, but when they go out being ghosts, they have to wear a white cloth. And there's with holes in it. And there's a film, isn't there, about a ghost who's in that, which I don't know if it's out yet. I think it was at Sundance.
What's it, with a ghost cat as well?
No, not a ghost cat, but...
Oh, John.
The guy wear a sheet over themselves.
Yes, where the ghost is represented with a sheet over themselves.
Okay.
I was
thinking more of Charlie Brown, but okay.
No, it's a serious film. Oh, it's a ghost story starring Rooney Mara and Casey Affleck.
All right. About your generic names there, huh?
And yes, it's Casey Affleck is a ghost, and when he's haunting people, he wears a white sheet over his head.
And do people actually get scared like it is a ghost?
I don't know, I've not watched the trailer. I've only heard a description of it on podcasts. And I was like,
Sounds interesting.
This does exactly the same thing.
I think as cute ones go, though, there's another one later on that is way cuter than this.
Oh, I'll find out what that is.
Yeah.
This was one of my favourites. So if I was making a list of things for people to check out, I would say, check this one out. Right. Okay. Well, what was I looking for? Next up, we have Tokyo of the Moon's Shadow, directed by Mizuno Takanobu, who I couldn't find anything else of note they've done, and I can't remember what this involved.
I did the main have, I guess, sending our point here is that the original story was by Goichi Suda, aka Suda 51, the game video game director.
Ah, gotcha.
Did Killer 7 and No More Heroes and things of that ilk, usually involving assassins.
Well, that which connects it to the previous one, because Shigeto Koyama did the weapon and mechanical design on No More Heroes as well.
Yeah. He's kind of just my hero and my aider was all over this thing, but I guess Shigeto Koyama is kind of like the shadow guy to that. He's doing pulling a lot of different duties all over here, too.
But can any of us remember what happened in this?
Well,
There's a boy in the moon, and he communicates via ham radio with a girl in Japan. And in between that, his job is to defend Earth from threats from outer space.
Okay, I do remember it now, yes.
It's weird because it is super... I felt it was pretty forgettable. And then I read the synopsis, and the synopsis gives away far more than what I got from the short itself, because the girl's actually blind, apparently. And I just did not get that. So the kid is one of the 8 guardians of the solar system, and he falls in love with a blind girl over a radio system. That's what it says. And I was like, yeah, I guess it does, but I didn't realize she was blind.
I didn't get that either.
No.
Didn't factor in too much anyway.
I don't know how you would know otherwise, but never mind. It's
No, I was counting the minutes till the next one started.
Why, had you seen the next one before? Or?
No.
Oh, just in general?
Wanted something else which wasn't this.
Oh, it wasn't that bad?
No, it wasn't. Terrible. It's not the worst, but there's other ones later on which I'll be in a similar situation if I cannot remember what happened in them at all.
Yeah, actually, it's my second time watching this one, and the version I remember from the first time watching it, however long ago, was completely different to what I saw this time. Version I remembered, rather. And I actually, somehow over the course of rewatching all of these for the purposes of the podcast, I skipped past this one and just watched it in there like 15 minutes before we started our recording.
And you still weren't too sure what it was. That's great. But it ain't terrible. It sounds like we're saying it's super boring.
Oh, no, it's not terrible.
It's got Vex and shit. So
it had a lot more kind of bright spots in it, I remember. It's like when he's talking to the guy who lives on Mars, and he's apparently a great dancer, and it's like, yeah, sorry, let's dance, and there's a little bit there.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not actively remembering it because it's bad. So,
yeah, it's just there's...
There's just not much to hook itself into, yeah.
No.
Next on the list was Three Fallen Witnesses, directed by Satoru Utsunomiya, who is a guy who I assume should have done more things of note, because the two things of note that I was like, oh, I like those. So he was the character designer on Mamoru Oshii's Gosenzo-sama Banbanzai. Yes. But also the director of episode 8 of Paranoia Agent, which is the best episode of Paranoia Agent and one of my favourite episodes of TV ever.
Oh, wow.
Which is the one with the...
Well, just say what it is.
Yes.
Okay. I was frightened in case you were going to spoil it.
The same what it's about.
Yes, I'm just going to say what it's about. It's about three people trying to commit suicide.
Oh.
Oh, no.
It's pretty clear from the opening minutes that's what it's about.
Okay. That's fine.
It's the point at which Paranoia Agent unfairly might say goes off the rails in that it abandons all the story it's been telling up to that point. But yeah, I really like that episode. It's like, oh, what else has he directed? Well, this, I think, and not much else. He's done lots of other animation work. So this is about two detectives who are able to recreate scenes from the past from DNA in hair. And they're trying to find out how a woman was murdered.
Yeah.
Yes.
And the woman who's murdered and the female detective look far too similar. So much so that one point I was like, I've got this sus. That's actually her. And I was like, no, it's not. There's a bit where they stood next to each other. They've both got the same outfit on. It's almost the same, but it ain't.
I think that's just his character designs. Because once I realised who he was with the Gosensu-sama, it's like these are like very close in sort of character designs to that.
I mean, I like the look. They're very unique looking, especially the close-ups of the faces and stuff. They're pretty nice to look at, but I thought I had it sussed, and I just didn't. Yeah, I really didn't.
It kind of plays out like a farce a bit to begin with, because they can interact with these people in the recreations. And so they get there before the murders happen, so they have to go and hide in the cupboard.
Yeah. Why would they have to hide, though? Because it's not like they could be killed themselves.
No, I think it's more they want to see this play out because they want to get an accurate version
without influencing themselves. Yeah.
It's like going back in time. You can't interfere with the past, which will change the future. It's to change the outcome of things.
Yes. I see. But I like this a lot, though.
Yeah.
I was hooked. I was really hooked.
Yeah, so I wasn't sure where it was going because he kept talking about hair and then it pulls out and you see they're in a simulation. And then he pulls out some more and you can see the husband is also watching the simulation. Mm-hmm. And then you get the payoff of, like, oh, this thing they've pulled out from the hair is probably going to make him regret that he's murdered his wife.
Well, I don't think he did it. I think it's because the thing that he says to her in the apartment, which is something along the lines of, it's something quite threatening in tone, but depending on how the context, it's quite sweet. It's something like,
have a nice life.
Yeah, yeah. And then you see that, like, a flashback or a memory from her hair where they were kids or, like, just starting dating or whatever else, and he gives her that gift that has those words on it. So I was like, So I don't know whether he did.
Well, there you go.
He is very creepy.
Yes, he is.
He's very creepy. But I think he's built up to be this creepy,
lecherous
character.
Yeah, clearly they suspect him and
they're
trying to find the evidence.
And he kind of cries at the end as well.
Yeah, because that's why I thought he could see it. And that was why he was regretting what he did, because he then saw how in love they were in the past.
Ah, could be that as well. Which I think is a sign of a good short, because it's very open and we don't really know.
That's pretty good. Whenever I see a guy like that now, I think, oh, it's Kira from Jojo Part 4. Obviously up to no good.
Yeah, I like this one a lot, actually. It was I was kind of sad to see it end. I just wanted to know, did he bloody do it or not?
Well, that's why. Leave it ambiguous.
Yeah.
Solve the mystery yourself.
I want to see a weekly procedural with these two detectives cracking mysteries left, right, and centre.
Yeah, I'm not sure it would hold up to a full... Because I thought that originally, but maybe you could get a full film out of it.
But, especially if they revealed that it was a simulation maybe halfway through the film and you didn't know.
But
I think the reveal is really good.
It definitely works as a short, though. It's not just a pitch for a TV show.
No, no.
Unlike things we'll get to later, which are clearly just a pitch. I mean, I might buy what they're selling, but I can't make anime TV shows. Next up, we've got The Diary of Ochibi. Directed by Masashi Kawamura, who did the Tatami Galaxy ending. And I've written down, based on Mayoko Anno's characters more than the manga, because it's all done in a clever way that completely is something new from the manga. And that it's stop-motion collage.
Is it like the character is like a little mascot character for... It's like, I thought it was like a tourism or a branding thing, more so than its own little...
It could be, but you can read the comic on Crunchyroll.
This is the cute one. This was the cute one that I meant.
You are correct, yes, this is cuter.
Unbelievably cute. Because at first I was like, oh, what, this is going to be so dull, and then the little thing starts interacting with everything, and it's really cleverly done. Very clever.
Yeah, I like the different mediums then that they implement that inform the story as well. I think the little winter segment then, it plays out on the side of like a cup of tea,
And then the roundness of the teacup, like, you know, it plays, it compliments them. The character's like rolling up snowballs like a snowman with.
That's actually my favorite bit, because I'm nearly 100% certain that each frame is a different cup, because the top of the cup changes to such a degree it can't be the same cup. If you watch it back, it's like, honestly, and it's like, wow, if that is a different cup for each frame, that is insane.
Well, the property had 24 cups, and it had 24 frames, didn't it? or however many frames it would be that the one that look like. Mm.
But it looks great. I kind of fell in love with this, and I was like, oh, this is really sweet.
Hmm.
Well, there's 136 chapters on Crunchyroll.
Not that sweet. It ain't that sweet.
But they won't look like this.
Exactly.
Lovely little tangible
this
work of art.
This is really clever, like, utilization of, like, leaves and whatever else it uses. And I was super impressed.
Yeah, I'm a sucker for this sort of thing. I think probably ever since seeing Teeny Little Super Guy on Sesame Street.
What's Teeny Little?
So he was like a character who was drawn on the side of a glass, and he'd wander around the house.
Oh, yes! Yes! Yeah, I know the one.
You know him.
Of course, yeah.
this is really good. And I think this was one which was crowdfunded, if I remember correctly. Had an Indiegogo.
Oh, really? I thought by nature or damage and exploit, you could maybe have some kind of reimbursement to get your work in here, or is it a thing where you had to go out on your own thought and present something that's worthy of the expo?
I don't know, or maybe they were doing it anyway and it ended up in the expo.
Chuck it in, yeah. I would have liked to have watched a behind the scenes of this. Like, there's a behind the scenes thing later that's all well and good.
Well, there is a behind the scenes. There is a behind the scenes video
of this.
Yes.
Oh well, I'll have to hunt that down afterwards.
It is on YouTube.
Awesome.
So I'll bookmark this for you. Right, next up we have Icon Friday by Day, directed by Kazuya Surumaki, who I couldn't find anything else of note by them. Could you?
Are you sure?
I forgot to search for their name. As I was going
I think Kazuya Surumaki is the SLC director.
Loads of things, yes. He's the Evangelion director, yes. And Fooly Cooly, yes, you're quite right. I just forgot to search for them.
Yeah, story by the FLCL manga creator, and then animation production by Sushio, who's like a character designer for loads of related things.
Well, there you go. I was correct in my summation that I'd missed that one. this is really good. It's about tiny little squirrels who live inside a girl.
Yeah. It was also a battleship.
Yes, yeah. It's eerily similar to a over-the-edge player character that somebody once had in one of my campaigns. Except that was a squirrel who had an even tinier goat piloting it.
A goat?
Yes.
Hmm. Not traditionally known for being small creatures, but okay.
I like this. It's quite sad as well. I found when one of them dies or gives up their life to save the rest of them, I was like, oh, it's really sweet. But this is really good fun. What were they fighting over? What's the battle about? I want to know more.
Space Wars come to world. It's a little like, oh, they have like the robot bodies and Men in Black and they get some kind of little thing like that.
Yeah. Well, they did say what they were fighting over, but it was all sort of a word which would have made no sense. And then when we saw it was like a boy who was full of jelly beans once you split him open and they all went flying.
Oh, yes, of course.
It was apparently the transport ship.
Mm. I kind of like how the, you know, from the outside looks like old regular school girl. She's a klutz and she's run to school with a toaster in her mouth. But all her like little clumsiness is just because the crew inside are piloting her aren't quite getting to grips with how to control her just yet.
But the creepy thing is that her family appear to be real humans, unaware that their daughter is this robot. So it's like, was there a daughter? Or have they been infiltrating ever since there was as a baby?
Yikes. That's the dark second episode, the backstory.
A lot can be inferred from this, with quite unsettling, but it's quite bouncy and fun, besides all that.
Mm.
Yeah, and it's fun that the enemies are little rabbits piloting people.
Mm.
But yeah, this was a lot of fun. Exactly the sort of thing I enjoy. And then we got two things which were just recycling stuff from the previous lot of episodes. Mm-hmm. So we got Me, Me, Me Chronic, a remix.
Yeah.
And we got Making of Evangelion Another Impact. Not as eager to see that, Anthony, as you were.
Well, perhaps not, but I still found it really interesting to see the different like composites that were added to make up the image. Because as we said previously, it looks great when that AVA unit is smashing through the building. So it was nice to see how it come together. But I'd rather see a little Diary of a Chibi making up.
Then we've got some fresh stuff with Iconic Field, directed by Ikuto Yamashita, who's been a mecha designer for Evangelion, I think, right from the start.
Mm.
And this is the one I was referring to as just feeling like a pitch.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It was an AMV. It felt like there's a series out there. Someone's got hold of it and just stuck music to it. Which is it. I still like the look of it. I'm still intrigued, but yeah, you're right.
It's fine. There were touches to it I did like. I liked how they grafted the helicopter cockpit to make it the head of the other like reclaimed alien robot. And there were some cool shots from then inside a cockpit then when they're fighting another one in the air. Those look pretty cool. I don't see a lot of that in similar mecha anime. But besides all that, you know. It seemed pretty rote, boilerplate kind of series, besides all that.
Yeah. What was the twist? Because I seem to remember there being like a reveal at some point with the girl with the blue hair.
Oh, I think it was something. Oh,
was she the bad guy or something?
The main
all
character
along,
and her met in the past when he was a boy. Yes. He grew up, but she didn't age a day. And, oh, what's this mystery? And she's on the side of the invading aliens, what does this mean? I don't fucking know. This isn't a real series, so.
Yeah, the mecha design's good. There's like a screwball mad science theory, which I quite liked as well, about how these mecha work. But as you say, it's just bits and pieces of a series which doesn't exist.
Yeah, I mean, there's not even any like voice dialogue. It's just people are talking, you see their mouth moving, but you don't hear anything. It's just the subtitles.
Which again,
laziness.
Which again kind of makes it like feel like a pilot for a thing which doesn't exist as well. Like how the Lupin the Eighth pilot doesn't have any dialogue, but there are subtitles for it.
Yeah. I can almost imagine someone in the boardroom going, okay, now imagine this guy, but voiced by Koichi Yamadera. Can you hear it? Can you hear it in your mind?
Or maybe they just felt like giving him and Megumi a day off on that short.
Mm.
Next up, we've got On a Gloomy Night, directed by Tadashi Hiramatsu, who was the Yuri on Ice character designer and has worked on most Gainax things of note in the 21st century. And it is based on the novel Dictator Without a Face by Sakaki Ren. So, what's all this about?
I'm pleased you said it.
World events yet to be. Seems a little far out until at least the turn of this decade. Now they could come to pass. Oh.
So I just understood that Japan lost like their own influence of their own country sort of thing, and they were getting influence from elsewhere, lost their freedom. I don't know, but...
Yeah, well, like, you know, there was some kind of economic disaster, and they get absorbed into a greater Asian Federation, which China basically runs. And then, of course, there's a counter movement to try and reclaim their national dignity.
And at one point, I thought the boy was also the leader. Like, it was a progression of maybe 30 years or something. And then when you see him old at the end, I thought that was him. But yeah, then you see the boy down.
I think I wouldn't take anything particularly red on face value. I think the metaphor is that the future will fuck you.
Ah,
because
okay.
The woman is, her name is the future, isn't she?
Or, Mirai, yeah.
Which I think is the translation they've given, which apparently was picked out by the director, was the English translation. So I think you could also translate it as progress.
Oh, interesting. That's...
So I'm not entirely sure that she exists and that she's just a metaphor for the future.
It was all right, but I kind of didn't get it. But that shed some light, what you just said there, which certainly adds to it a little bit.
Yeah. Well, it could serve maybe as, like, you know, something of a warning perhaps as well, because there's a lot of, like, right-wing nationalist fervour getting momentum in Japan right now.
You see, I'm not sure. I think this might be in favour of right-wing nationalist fervour. Or maybe in favour of right-wing nationalists, but maybe not further.
But then they don't seem to come off very well anyway either.
That's because he sells them out, you see. He doesn't live up to his promises.
There's a lot going on for a 7-minute short, or 8 minutes, whatever it is. It's deep. Well, maybe not that deep.
I've seen it twice now, and I'm still not entirely sure of the role of things. Maybe that's it. The future is uncertainty, so who can really be sure?
Yeah. This ain't making my list, I'll tell you that. Sorry,
Yeah, it's well made, but yeah, I think the story is maybe harder to translate than many minutes they've done it in.
Again, it could be a good feature film, you know, when you had time to maybe flesh out and fill in some of these gaps.
Yeah.
When you're getting it very much condensed, with a lot of things running over each other and into each other, some of it gets lost.
Talking of things condensed into 9 minutes, Memoirs of Amorous Gentlemen. This time directed by Mayuki Anno and Artra Entertainment, I'm guessing that's how it's pronounced. They've got the R the other way around.
It's cool.
And it's based on her manga, which you can also read at Crunchyroll. And this is about the adventures of a prostitute and her gigolo boyfriend. And it's basically scenes out the comic.
Mm-hmm. Motion comic.
Yeah.
Manga 2.5.
It got me to read the comic, so I think it did its job.
Oh, did it?
Yes.
Does anything worthwhile happen in the comic?
The comic's pretty good, from what I've heard by word of mouth, anyway.
Yeah, I wasn't too keen on this one. I was trying to understand if there was a message there, because I didn't realize it was a fully fledged comic. So I just thought it was a one-off. So I was like, is it domestic abuse it's referencing? And what was the polishing of the father's head?
I think it was just his fetish.
Fetish, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I like that style. I think it looks good. It's I've seen it elsewhere. On games and stuff. But, yeah. Bit too iffy.
Well, it's only 9 chapters, the comic, so...
Voice trailer for a pretty good comic.
Yes. I think that's pretty much how it works.
Yeah. And, like, I think this the nature of the thing, I think... This looks interesting. I feel like the atmosphere that it builds up, it works better. I think it will look better on the page. I'm not sure how... Well, doesn't say no. It wouldn't be impossible to adapt an animation, but I kind of... This made me pine more to but just kind of sit down and read it, where then I wished him would make a full TV series or whatever of this, thinking, no, I think some of the images would look better in comic form. They play better for me, I think.
Yeah.
And then, finally, we have Rapid Rouge by... Now, this guy, definitely, no, hasn't got anything else. It's Daisuke Onitsuka. In which a couple of people at war with some other people...
Techno samurais!
...go and try and rescue their leader, and he says, no, don't rescue me. Stop fighting. But they carry on fighting anyway. This was very tech demo-ish.
Oh, yeah. There's like a to-be-continued bit with a preview, and some of the scenes haven't even been fully rendered yet.
I liked it.
Did you?
Yeah, I did. I was like, oh, this is like Jinro. This feels like it's dark, gritty, at times too dark. I was like, who's who? Who's moving there? And I couldn't quite see. But I liked it.
I see. This was my least favourite of this batch of shorts.
Wow. I mean, I don't know. I'm a fan of samurais and stuff.
I think it may have come on a day of watching things with bad CG and it inherited my gripes.
So do you think it doesn't look very good?
I don't think it looks very good, no.
Ah. See, I like that very, grainy black and white extract of color look with the spot color in it. I think it looked good, but
you see, have you watched Ganso yet?
No. Did it do that better?
Once you watch Ganso, you'll suddenly be like, "Well, come on, other CG people in anime,
well, keep up
your game." Yes.
Oh, is it that good? Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's better ways to do it. They're trying to use CG to stand in for 2D animation and then try and work with it accordingly, but it never looks right. Or is it just maybe try and improve how the CG looks and make something more out of that than try to ape a different style, a different medium and things?
But also, to be fair, I think Ganso uses a lot of motion capture as well.
Hmm.
What about at the end, though, where it's like, oh, we've been on a flying airship all this time. This isn't land. I was like, oh, this is intriguing. I was like, this is intriguing. But I don't know if it would work as a series, because I don't know. I'd probably get bored. As much as I like the look of it, I don't think I could watch it for 20 minutes.
It was very predictable. Very predictable.
Oh, of course.
In these 9 minutes or whatever it was.
But I still liked it. To say it's the worst of the bunch is, I mean...
Fair?
I'd say it's certainly fair. But it's a good bunch, this, actually.
I'd say even Tokyo the Moon Shadow even would beat it out, because that's a little bit more ambitious. I'm not going to count the two things that recycled, 20A and B, are just recycled.
Oh, yeah,
things.
That's a bit unfair.
Out of the original proper shorts we get in this batch. I think it would, for me, this would be bound to pile.
I guess for me, it's the memoirs of that amorous gentleman is my weak link.
Hmm. But overall, I think this was a better batch than the first batch.
Oh, yeah. There's less Evangelion navel gazing and.
Oh yeah, of course, yeah. I kind of forgot about that because I've kicked those out of my mind.
Right, that's everything I think. So that's this episode taken care of. Anything you want to plug, Niall?
I can find me on my own podcast about animation of all sorts, Secret Center of Madness, at secretcenterofmadness.com. And otherwise, you can contact me, complain at me on Twitter at Nicolas Cage. That's NIALLCOLAS_Cage.
Anthony, anything you want to plug?
Yeah, just find me on Twitter, which is AntAskew.
You can find me on Twitter at Awesome_Engine. And that's Dynamite in the Brain finished for another week. If you liked it, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or your podcast So that's Dynamite in the Brain, finished for another week. If you liked it, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or your podcast aggregator of choice. Next week on the show, more Animator Expo shorts.
Yes!
Goodbye.
Hey.
Bye.
Your life's gone down the drain. Your body's wrecked with pain. There's just one thing to blame. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain. Dynamite in the brain.